Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Morning.
Good morning.
Guess who just got back today?
Been 2 weeks.
Been a whole 2 weeks.
How was your trip?
Great trip. Awesome trip. Great golf course. Great golf tournament. Finished second. Played great. Was a bunch of degenerates. Lots of food. Lots of fun.
And where were you?
We're in Jupiter at a place called Admiral's Cove. Oh, because right after this, I drive to Arizona and I got to go to the waste management tomorrow at Jim McMahon's golf tournament on Friday. I'm playing in a charity celebrity flag football game on Saturday morning. And then we got to do our game on Saturday night.
I love that you brought that up. So anyone listening from Canada, the Hockey Night in Canada player cast, we'll have Jeremy Roenick on there with myself and Craig. So make sure you know who we're doing. We're doing Chicago at Winnipeg. Hey, so a couple things I read yesterday that I need to run by you, JR. Do you know Aaron Rodgers?
I don't, but I've met him many times.
Okay. Have you heard, like, you know, he's up in the air about retirement and everything again?
Yes.
So have you heard what he's going to be doing to help him come to his decision for next season?
What's he doing?
He's going on a 4-day darkness retreat. He goes into a little house. They black out all the windows, and it's just dark and it's silent. And apparently he's like, I know people that have done this and they've had profound results and great experiences, and it helps, I guess. I guess
it's shut off the hamster wheel that's running around in everyone's brain.
That would make my hamster wheel go. Being in there.
Maybe that's the reason for it. Maybe your hamster will turn around and run the other way, JR.
Like how do you spend 96 hours like that?
I don't know.
I think ultimately what you know, Aaron Rodgers is certainly a views and sees life in a different way than most. Okay, on the level of that, I think that he looks at life and everything in it. You know, to sit there and I find it very intriguing. I'm not sure I would want to do it for 4 days sitting in the dark.
So did you hear about this, Riff? You heard about this?
I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me with him. He is a different cat. Okay. And a very,
that's for sure.
He's a very spiritual person. You know, I think he's on another level of thinking than most people out there.
I think he's constantly tripping. Isn't he on the shrooms and the micro dosing or whatever he does? Have you ever heard of this?
Don't you find like that these real superstars, these people that play at such high levels, have to be kind of introverty, kind of you know, very, I don't know, spiritual is what the word you use, but kind of odd and different in terms of the way that they see things, the way that they view things, the way that they are, I guess, so disciplined in what they do and can continue to do it. And yet sometimes become a little bit like we said, odd. Cause I mean, I've met Aaron and he's a nice guy, but he's not a guy that you leave saying, wow, what a super nice guy. That guy was awesome. I mean, I've seen him, like I said, I made a joke about him signing autographs for 10-year-olds. You know, I've seen him decline to sign autographs many, many times when we're at golf tournaments and celebrity events. But then hear good things about him from other people. So I don't know what to think. And whatever floats his boat, let him go do it. All I know is you put me in a dark room for 4 days, I might not be coming out. I might be hanging from something.
Well, listen, you sit there and if you want to stare just at the black and the darkness, okay, I really am intrigued by it. And not that I would certainly want to do it, but I'm very intrigued by it because in our society, everything is about your hamster wheel. The hamster that's running in your brain is running overtime. It does not stop from the minute that you get up in the morning until the minute that you go to bed at night. Social media, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all of this stuff, the news. But here's the thing, JR, it used to be many, many years ago that you would just sit in front of a TV, maybe turn it on in the morning for some background music and you would watch the news. Now you have news for, if you're up for 12 hours a day or longer, you are constantly hearing beeps and tweets and alerts and alarms, and you're constantly your brain is overloading. It's like today we're burning ourselves out mentally more than physically. We do less physically, okay? We do less physically, and our brains are on overload right now. So when I sit here and I talk, when I hear Petey bring this up, it actually is super intriguing to basically take, you know, a few days of your life where you can basically completely shut things off. And I would wonder what that would do to most people. Okay. What are you going to do for 4 days in the dark, JR?
The only thing that you can do, you're really going to have to evaluate your life and evaluate what you've done, evaluate your friends, evaluate your family, your situation. Where do you want to be? Evaluate your future in terms of where you want to be, your health. I'm sure everything goes through your mind because Petey, I totally agree with you and Riv that news and social media and bad news is around us all the time, especially nowadays.
Yep.
Like there's so much to be frustrated about nowadays. It finds you whether you want to watch it or not, Riv, and I totally agree with you. So being in that kind of atmosphere where there's no sound, there's no lights, There's nothing that is going to distract you from just thinking about your life and nothing else. And
I can't wait to see what comes out of this, because you know he's going to be asked about it. His decision's going to depend on it. All of it. I shouldn't say depend on it, but it feels like that's what this is all about. So anyway, I thought I would bring that up, because I heard him. He kind of casually mentioned it talking to on Pat McAfee. And I didn't think Pat McAfee was going to pursue the conversation. Then all of a sudden, he, like a good broadcaster does, he lets the guy finish his point and then goes back to what he heard that was interesting and what he said. And he brought up the retreat. He talked about the isolation retreat in darkness. And he's so he's going to have a decision on next season after that. Another thing that happened last night that I know none of us care about, not because he's not great, because I've never been a fan of his. Never. Okay. But LeBron James became the highest scoring or all-time leading points in NBA history. You can comment or not comment. Maybe you don't give a shit, but quite a massive feat. If you ask
Listen,
me,
I think you, it's not that you don't give a shit, because I mean, that's impressive. That's an impressive thing. Same thing. If Ovi passed Gretz, I mean, it would be, whether you're a hockey fan or not, you have to respect the fact of someone doing something so unbelievable. And hey, you can't take away from LeBron James that he's one of the greatest players in the history of basketball. Now, yes. There are people arguing saying he is the best. I mean, it's arguable. It's opinionated. I just think he's an asshole.
I think he's the ultimate individual. Like,
what do you mean by that? What do you mean by he's the ultimate individual?
Like,
he's an arrogant douchebag, is what he is. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is why. For here's the thing: there's people that when you have this conversation all the time, okay, who's the greatest basketball player to ever play? And you're going to have, you know, your Michael Jordans, you're going to have your Wilt Chamberlains, you're going to have your Kobe Bryants, you're going to have your Wes. And when you sit there and you talk about LeBron James, it's almost impossible to argue that he is not truly the greatest basketball player to ever play the game. And when you have a large number of people in this debate, you're going to have the 50% that believe, okay, 100% that LeBron James is the greatest basketball player to ever play the game of basketball. And then the other 50% actually in the back of their minds believe what the first 50% said, but they can't stand LeBron James and his personality and what he exudes. And he's just a complete, you know, it's almost like he's just wants the limelight. It's so bad. And what his beliefs and philosophies are, it's not about basketball anymore. So you're making a decision on a personal trait with LeBron James and not about the basketball.
That also what lost me, and he's done it many times, is, you know, if you ask a hockey player who's the best player in the game, every single hockey player is going to name Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon or, you know, of that nature, Cale Makar, right? Somebody other than themselves. And even if you ask Connor McDavid, who's the best player in the National Hockey League? You know what he's going to say?
Sidney Crosby.
Sidney Crosby, Nathan McKinnon. Yeah, exactly. What LeBron does, he says, me. I am. I'm the best player. Oh, how did I not win the MVP? It's bullshit. I'm not, you know, and see, that's where
that is exactly what I'm talking about, Jer. Yeah, you just absolutely nailed it on the head.
He said somewhere the other day that he thinks he's the greatest player to ever play.
Now, I know you need to have confidence.
How do you say that? Like, I don't think Michael Jordan would have ever said this, or Kobe would have ever said this while they were still playing.
This is the difference. Michael would say Kobe or would say somebody else, but in his mind,
he knows it's him.
He said he knows he believes it's him,
and that's okay with me.
Yeah, but the arrogance of a LeBron James is is overwhelming that, you know, that he is like that. And it just, it does. It makes you not want to watch him, even how good he is. It's just, it is what it is.
He won a championship with Miami. I'll mention this. You guys can comment if you want, then we can move on. But he won a championship in Miami. Two championships, I think, but one of them, he was the playoff MVP, and he was, they handed him the trophy, the both trophies. And he stood there with this, like this smirk on his face. And I'll never forget it. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? He's so goddamn like not humble. You know what I mean? Like he's the furthest thing from humble. And then he does the interview after, and it's like everyone said, I couldn't do this. Everyone, I think it was just maybe his first championship. Everyone said, I couldn't do this. Everyone said, you know, I wasn't good enough to get this done. Or everyone said I would never be. And it was like, I. And it went all over. It went viral all over the internet, because people were like, holy, how many I's did we count in this interview? You know what I mean? Like, where's the mention of the team? Like, we did this, you know, team effort, you know, got to give it to this guy. You know, our defense was amazing, coaching. Like, it was all about him.
Yeah.
And that's why I hate
that
he's number one in all time, because it'll never be passed.
Yeah. I know you're a big basketball fan, Petey, and I will tell you this, and that this is God's honest truth. I do not like basketball at all. I never watch it. The only time that I put my eyes on it is if it's on the TV at the bar or at the restaurant that I'm at, and I'm just glancing at it, just kind of, you know, seeing what's going on. But I'll never turn it on. I'll never go to a game. And I'm telling you, a lot of the reason I feel that way is because of LeBron James. Single-handedly. And then I'm not kidding.
But it's funny, when Jordan was playing, the whole fucking world was dialed in.
I went.
That's when I watched basketball, Petey. That's when I watched basketball.
Yeah. Shelly and I used to go to Bulls games and sit right underneath the hoop and watch Pippen and Jordan and Rodman and the boys just wreck other teams. It was great. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Good for him. Good for him, because I'm sure he's patting himself on the back and having himself a one-man party at home last night.
And they stopped the game in the third quarter. There was like 10 seconds left in the third quarter. They stopped the whole game and did this whole thing on the court. And it's like, oh, my God. Anyway, okay. Sorry, moving on. Dylan Cousins got a 7-year extension yesterday, JR. $7.1 million per season. So 7 years, $49.7 million. Tage Thompson, 7 years, $50 million. I think he makes like $42,000 a year less than Tage. They have their two centermen locked up for the next 7 years at $14.25 million. One of them could be a 100-point guy, Tage, and the other one could be a 70 or 80-point guy, and they've got him for $14.25 million. Am I wrong with that, Riv? Could you not project him or see him being a 70-80-point guy? Or am I high on that side?
I would say that you are absolutely right there. I think that this young man's like 21, just turned 22, I think. He's got 43 points, JR, a 17 goals in 49 games. He's a plus three. He's a physical player that can play a physical brand of hockey. He's a power play guy. He's a penalty kill guy. He's 6'3". Body still like.
Hey, good for them. Then good for them. Especially a young player like that. And I know we know that Ribs loves young players that have upside.
Well, I mean, he's got all the ingredients. His seventh overall pick. Okay, in 2019, JR, he brought along slowly and has continued to get better every year. He has basically been a breakout player, another very young breakout player. He's going to be turning 22 actually tomorrow, gentlemen.
And listen, I mean, I think with a real strong ending to the season, they have, what, 32 games left. Let's just give him 20 points. Make it real simple, 20 points. You're looking at 64, 63, 64 points, 25 goals, JR, as a 21-year-old in the league. It's pretty damn good, for today's standard. I think he's got a much, much higher ceiling as he continues to fill out and grow. I think he's this contract for him starting next year at $7 million and the salary cap somewhat, let's just say, moves a couple million dollars within 3 to 4 years from now. We spoke about this before. 3 to 4 years from now, the cap is going to go up 10 million plus. Okay. Gary Bettman just said the other day that the NHL revenue is going to be reaching close to $6 billion. So the game's growing. And when the game is growing, that's good for the owners and it's good for the players. And the salary cap right now that's around $83 million is going to go up in the next 3 to 4 years from now significantly. So
okay, let me ask you a question. And you saying that, okay, I'm gonna throw in this question with you. You can add it to your answer here, because I've been reading how the attendance, not the attendance, but the viewership on television is down 25% on the National Hockey League. Is that going to affect that cap that you think moving forward?
TV money's paid for now.
But TV money is also, also advertisements. It's also people that buy the things off of, less people watching, less things being bought.
That's so very true. I guess
to not sit and panic over the numbers and who brought those numbers out. There's all different ways of looking at numbers. Okay. There's the ones that just are flat out right in your face saying, okay, we're down, so-and-so amount, of people that are watching at home. And the answer and the reason is, why is that happening? Okay. But we also know, is it people are not watching as much, or are they on different platforms? Like there's kids out there that are watching NHL games that are streaming it on maybe, 100%. Illegal, live streamers. It doesn't mean that there's less people watching it. They're just not watching it on the platforms that the NHL provides. Cause I find it very confusing. This is kind of what I do. I love watching hockey and I find it very confusing. This ESPN Plus, and then it's on, TNT, and then it's, it just seems like you can't find your local game that it's going to be on the same channel, the same night, where you don't even have to look. You just know. One night I turn on the TV, it's not on there. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Petey's like, well, it's on ESPN Plus. You got to go get that. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is going on?
Vanner brought this up the other day. It's so hard to find a hockey game.
Yeah, especially try finding one here in Southern Cal. Yeah. The only time you can find one is the game of the week on TNT, or ESPN. And you're right, whether it's ESPN Plus, ESPN, I don't know. I just thought I'd bring that little tidbit up because, we just, with the All-Star game just happening over the weekend, viewership being very low on that. Then you're talking about the salary cap. It's amazing to me that what you just said, Riv, $6 billion. I mean, that's unheard of. That's unheard of. Who would have thought that coming off of the pandemic where they lost as much money as they did, but it seems like they're making it up. That's amazing. Somebody's doing something right.
You brought up the All-Star game, kind of undeniable how embarrassing it is. Although you had some TV time because Connor McDavid going 4 for 4.
Was that awesome? I was in Florida. I was at a restaurant and I saw it on television. And that's my favorite event, is the accuracy shooting. So I got up from the table and went to the bar to watch it. And then Connor came up and I said to the person that was sitting at the bar, because he was watching it too, I said, watch this. I said, watch what happens right here. He's going to go 4 for 4. He's like, you think? I said, no, I know it. And he lit up the 4 for 4. And I yet literally screamed in the bar. I said, because that's such an awesome feat. And I don't think I've seen it since I did it. I don't remember it happening since I did it. And Connor made it look so fucking easy. It was just awesome. But I didn't see my face up there, but I really enjoyed watching Connor hit those targets.
That when was you're at three awesome. For three, do you start thinking, holy fuck, I'm going 4 for 4? Like, what's the mindset right away? Because hockey players have to think fast.
No, that's not true. Actually, you don't
start. Sorry, Riv. I'm talking to the guy who went 4 for 4 at the All-Star game. Sorry.
I will tell you, it's hitting the first one that is the toughest, because you don't want to continue to shoot and shoot and shoot and miss and miss. That first one is important. Once you hit the first one, then it becomes easier. The last one's the easiest one to hit, to tell you the truth. Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, the last one's the easiest to hit. I was shocked at how many guys took like as much time as they did to get all four. I mean, there's some guys that couldn't even get all four that just kept missing and missing and missing. That in today's game, with as talented as these kids are and shooters that they are.
Let's get something straight. How hard is it to hit fucking four targets? It's not fucking hard.
In that situation, it's a lot harder than you think.
Okay.
How many superstar players have ever done it, Riv? That's why it's such a feat. Ray Bourque, Jeremy Roenick, Connor McDavid.
Mark Messier.
Is that it? Of all the years doing the accuracy shooting, it's not like every year. It's like, who's going to go 4 for 4? It's, will anybody go 4 for 4?
The give a shit meter is not at the extreme.
Half the guys that are shooting are in the bag. Okay.
You must have been really riveted at the hockey golf segment. That was awesome. Who was the donkey that fucking thought of that one? Jesus Christ. Let's go play golf hockey on a golf course.
I was not a huge fan of that one.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It was absolutely embarrassing.
But what about
that was embarrassing?
What about the splash one? What about when they were on the beach and you had guys that had 30 seconds to hit the surfboards down, and if you hit them all down, you dunked Sidney Crosby or Cale Makar? I thought that was great, because liked about it is it was away from the rink. It was away from that atmosphere at the rink where it's really stuffy and boring.
Yeah, I think
so was the golf. The golf was away from the rink.
Yeah, but the golf was really, really bad. It was really, really bad. It was really bad, and I was really against that dunk tank thing. But then,
was it really bad?
The golf?
The
golf was really, really bad, and I was against the dunk tank idea too at first. But then all of a sudden, I'm like, it's actually kind of cool. It's kind of not cool. It's kind of fun to see like Sidney Crosby actually smiling and laughing in a friggin' dunk tank. Where here I am,
I don't mind the dunk tank as much as I disliked the golf, because the golf I thought they reached way too far. You know, the beach look, it is Florida.
Yep.
You know, get that surfboard feel. I do think that guys enjoyed the challenge of putting one of their buddies or into a dunk tank. I think people enjoyed that. I mean,
I'm going to tell you this. To take a step back, okay, and look at the golf situation. Here's the thing. When I was watching the golf situation and I was watching those guys start off in the tee box, okay, and have to wrist the puck you know, 35 feet or whatever in the air to land it on the green. It was actually kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting because we've never seen it before. That's number one. Number two, today's kids, and you remember this, JR, you remember this, Petey, that after practice, you know, we'd be on the ice for an hour and 20 minutes doing our practice, this and that. The coaches get off the ice. What do hockey players do directly once the coaches get off the ice, what do?
We shoot, practice passing, sauce pass, sauce
yep,
pass.
But here. We play games. Yeah, we would have three guys go over to the penalty box that has the little circle, cool. And you would have five guys over there betting money to see who could get the puck.
I used to do that
in warmups.
Okay, hold on.
In warmups, I would do
so that.
That
was one thing that we did, JR. But then there was the other one where we called it, JR, come on down. We're playing. So all of a sudden you have one goaltender, you have the pucks at the top, and then the three guys along the sides. And it was called the one pass drill. So the guy shot from the top. There was a rebound, one pass, and you have to shoot and score and you get a point for it.
Also known as Juice Boy.
Juice Boy. Now that there we played. Mm-hmm. All the time.
There was
constant saucer pass drills or anything that we could do. So what I'm trying to say is this. When I was watching these kids and their kids shoot these pucks, they were actually enjoying themselves because this is what this generation wants to do. They want to do fun, tricked out stuff. They're on a golf course, wristing missiles 30 feet in the air to land it on a green close to the hole. These kids are super competitive. When you put them in that environment, they're going to enjoy themselves. And I just thought it was away from the rink because I think the stuff in the rink and the horse shit that they're like, we got Brady Tkachuk coming onto the ice with like shorts and a t-shirt and you know, his sunglasses on, and he's going to sit in a lawn chair. No, don't do that to these guys. Don't do it to these guys. Go there, have the fastest skater, the accuracy shooting, a deke, and just get the hell out of there and let those fans enjoy it.
Hey, JR, I have a question for you. When did the game start becoming unappealing to the players? Did you always like going, or was it a nuisance?
Remember we had this conversation, I think, a few weeks back. We had this whole conversation about my first All-Star game and sitting next to Gretz and right down the road from Mess and Coffee and how every major star was there. And then in the 2000s, it kind of became a burden for guys that they wanted the time off to go on vacation rather than having to go play in this All-Star game because it became diluted. I went to 9 and I was mad and disappointed when I didn't get picked, to tell you the truth. I was very happy to see, you know, everybody there this year, Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, McKinnon, McDavid. It was a full slate.
Riff right? doesn't think McDavid and Ovechkin should have been there. Or, sorry, why? Crosby and Ovechkin.
Why?
That question is directed at you, Craig.
Oh, you're the one who's fucking bringing it up there, big mouth. But I'll answer the question. I think right now, Ovechkin in the All-Star game with his son being there was way overblown. Okay, like yes, well,
that whole,
hey,
that whole little, segment that.
That little Sergey on the ice for, you know, like for everybody to see. No, it's not about Sergey. It's about all these other guys that have put time and effort into their craft. And I think they should be promoting those guys. Sidney Crosby is a great hockey player, still playing at a high level. Same with Alex Ovechkin. But I'm going to tell you right now, they will sell this game on their own. Okay. Just because of who they are and what they've done. I believe that those men, I was just going to call them young men. They're not young anymore. You got Ovechkin, who's what, 38 years old or 37 years old. Sidney Crosby's 35, 36. They have been the faces of this league for well over a decade. It's time to let them have some time to breathe
and not be the face. There's other players. There's other insanely skilled hockey players in this league that you have to continue to promote. And giving those guys like a William Nylander in Toronto, Toronto's a massive market. You want more people watching? Bring in more Toronto Maple Leaf guys. You know, there's Kyle Connor from Winnipeg who is an incredible hockey player who's having an incredible year. And all I'm saying is Ovechkin and Crosby have done their job. They've done their part. They're older. Let them have that time, that weekend.
Yeah, but think about this. Think about this, though, Riv. They are having great seasons on their own team. So they are still all-stars and the best players on their respective teams. So in terms of what they're doing this year with Ovechkin at 30-some-odd goals, Sidney's having a fantastic year and keeping Pittsburgh afloat. So they deserve to be there just by being the best players on their team. But also it gave the NHL a chance. And even though I hated the segment because it was boring as shit, it gave the National Hockey League the ability to bring these two guys that have carried the load of the face of the NHL for the last 15 years.
Yeah, they're icons now.
Put them together on the ice.
Thank you.
Because you know what? It might be the last time.
Thank you.
That this happens for them when they're having good seasons and you can still celebrate what they did. I think they did do that. And listen, having Ovi's kid out there, I mean, regardless, that was cute.
That entire PK Subban segment, sign the jersey.
Awful. Awful.
And then the two of them go in with Sergei, and then Sergei scores. That entire thing was cringeworthy, and I was embarrassed for Ovechkin and Crosby.
It was cringeworthy. I totally get it. But I do love the fact that they just – that seeing the two of them –
Yeah, but that's where the NHL misses, Jeremy. That's where they miss. And I know you'll probably agree because it sounds like we're on the same page. That's where they miss. They have that moment. You have the third and maybe – the last guy to ever score 800 NHL goals, okay? And you have arguably a top five player in the history of the game and one of the greatest ambassadors hockey's ever seen in Sidney Crosby. And that's how you're going to fucking send them off in their last All-Star game together? That was embarrassing. That is where the NHL absolutely...
Well, what would you do? Like, I mean, you shit on it so much...
I wouldn't have them skate out to center ice and have an
what would you have them do?
45 seconds with PK Subban signing a jersey.
What would you have them do? Do you have any ideas?
Can I have a few days to think about it? Pretty big event here. I don't want to just, you know, kind of throw it off the cuff. But
well, you would think if you're going to shit on it this much that you would have some sort of idea what you would do with them. I wouldn't even have them there because I think that they've been here since 18 years old. 20 years later, Alex Ovechkin is still there. Why not give him time for his All-Star break to maybe take his family someplace where he can relax, regroup for a playoff push in the end instead of selling these guys like they've done. Okay, there's other guys in this league that I think that you can sell.
Yeah,
and I think those guys should have had the opportunity.
Not to that.
You know what I think they should have done? I think they should have involved two of their biggest fans and found two of their biggest fans to come on the ice with them, be able to ask them any question that they want about their career, thank them for being so great and being whatever, have them sign their own jerseys, take them off and give them to a fan and say, thank you very much. For everything that you've done and what you're doing today and what you've done for the game and celebrate them that way with some of their biggest fans and let it go off. Not having PK Subban go out there and you know do whatever he did.
That was so cringeworthy. It was just anyway. I am glad that they were there though. I'll say that.
Hey, listen, I will say this as far reaching as the National Hockey League tried to go with the All-Star game. You have to give them credit for at least trying to bring in different things that is going to bring different attitudes, different viewers, different interests, trying to keep it within the atmosphere that they're in, like they were in Florida. But For the traditionalist, I think like myself, like Riv, I don't know about you, Petey, but it was just like, really? Are they really doing this? But I get it. It's, you want entertainment? Everybody would all say we want entertainment. We want people to be more expressive. We want people to be more this. Well, we got it. And now we're complaining about it. So it's kind of like it's a double-edged sword, you know, but.
Well, they're bringing it back to Toronto next year. And that'll be massive. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe the players won't love it, but it's not about the players. It's about raking in revenue. It's all of it. And I don't think the league is going to see the return in the revenue from this All-Star game in Florida that they will next year. So bold move, Gary. Bold move.
By the way, if it's reaching $6 billion, he's doing something right.
Yeah. You say
love him or hate him, he's doing something right. Sorry,
that's exactly it. My question right now is there is some trade talk with Vancouver. Vancouver right now is talking about there are players that are up for grabs. You have Quinn Hughes. His name is out there. Okay. Someone that you would have never in a million years thought that this kid would be available. But the other one is Brock Besser. Now, Brock Besser has been linked to a number of teams that have interest in him. Okay. And right now, what's being said is that the Sabres could be the favorite for Brock Besser. Now, there's still teams like Columbus, New Jersey, the Rangers, Philly, that have shown serious interest. But the Sabres right now are looking at trying to make their team better so they can keep pace with not only the teams that are behind them that are getting better, like the Islanders, but also trying to make a push for Pittsburgh and the Capitals. What are your thoughts on a Brock Besser to the Sabres? Is that something that makes sense?
I think it makes a lot of sense because I think Brock Besser is a superb goal scorer and a superb shooter. What Brock Besser needs is a change of venue. I think he's uninspired. I think he does not like playing the game in Vancouver. I don't think he doesn't like his situation. And I think he's playing right now the way that his attitude is day in and day out. Okay. Now, Vancouver is a great place to live if you don't have to travel. It's the worst travel team in all of hockey in Vancouver. Right. And we've known that. I mean, it makes it a little easier with San Jose and Seattle there. But Brock Besser is a top line guy. He's a top line guy.
Top line. Okay. Yeah, good.
I think you put him in a situation where he's inspired, where he starts putting the effort in again, where he starts playing the game that we saw him when he was a rookie and in his first couple of years when he was super sniping. I think that'd be a great pickup to get. And you might be able to get him a little bit cheaper right now because he is having such a down year.
Yeah. So what he's looking at right now is his first year in the league. I think he came out of playing for the University of North Dakota. He signed with the Vancouver Canucks and played 9 games that year, had 4 goals. Really, really good start. The next year, 62 games, 29 goals. The next year, 69 games, 26 goals. So these are, we're talking mm-hmm. about a guy that should be a 35 goal scorer, okay, in those top 2 years. The next year, 57 games, 16 goals. Still on pace for a 25-goal year.
Yep.
Then you have a 56-game season, 23 goals. Again, mm-hmm. a 35-goal pace. Then last year, 71 games, 23 goals.
Okay, so he can snipe. But the problem that you're talking about right now, which is the one thing that I think would bother any GM and scare any GM, is the amount of games that he's playing per year. For whatever reason, he's getting hurt. He is injury prone, and he's not putting up 78 to 82 games of play.
Yeah, yeah,
that's scary.
I guess when you think of that, and JR, you've played
how many goals do you have this year, Griff?
So he had in 42 games, he has 9 goals, 30 points. So he's on pace for a 60 goal, 60 point season and a 20 goal pace, playing on a team that has had multiple coaches and that obviously in a bit of a disarray. You've played on teams, JR, that when you're in that environment and things aren't going well, it weighs on you. It's heavy. Every day you come to the rink, it just seems like it's heavy.
It's awful. It feels like a job.
Yeah. It very much so, right? And I think Brock,
so bad Brock, that we can relate to the average human being out there. I think I saw a statistic the other day, like 85% of people don't love what they do or don't like what they do.
But that's why it's called a job. That's why it's called a job. Yes, right. True. And we were lucky enough to play a sport for a living. And I don't think any of us took that for granted. But when you're losing, coming to the rink is not exciting. It's what kind of practice are we going to have? The energy is low. There's no joking and pranks in the locker room. You go half hour later rather than the half hour earlier, like you usually do, because you want to be around the boys. You want to be in that atmosphere. It's less exciting and it weighs on you. It does weigh on you. You guys know, you guys have been in the situation. It sucks.
Yeah. So when I look at the situation, JR, it's actually really a very interesting trade prospect. Now, there's been links to Timo Meier. The only problem with dealing with Timo Meier is you're dealing with a guy that has a $10 million cap hit next year. So in order to keep his rights, you have to assign him to $10 million. There would be a long-term deal that you would want to get signed for Timo Meier. I think this is a much, much, much safer bet with Brock Besser. He's a 25-year-old player. It feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's only 25, turning 26, which bodes really, really well for the age dynamic of the Sabres. Okay. My thing when you're sitting there thinking about Brock Besser and what he does, what would you have to give up to acquire a Brock Besser right now? Because let's remember
salary situation. What's his contract? Is he up? He's a UFA. No, one more year.
This is the first year of a 3-year deal, making $6.65 million a year. So
when did he sign that deal? He was on a 3-year deal before that, wasn't he?
So the first guy that comes to my mind when I think of Buffalo, now I don't know Buffalo's full roster, but the first guy that comes to my mind is Casey Mittelstadt. He's one of the first guys that come to my head that says, hey, listen, he's got some upside. He's a pretty creative, crafty player. Is he the strongest guy in the world? No, but he's talented enough that you throw him into something with a first round pick. You might be able to, swoon Vancouver over a little bit. But he's the first guy that comes to my mind.
It's interesting whether it's going to be a roster player or something else, because right now, Peyton Krebs, for an example, who is a first round draft pick in 2019, he's a Western League kid. He's an Alberta kid. He's someone that is a roster player right now who's very young and who needs an opportunity to basically move forward in his game.
Send Olofsson because he can play with Pettersson.
I wouldn't be trading Victor Olofsson for a Brock Besser because you're ultimately, I think you're lessening your team, Petey. I think the Sabres are looking to make a push. They're making a push to get better. By trading away Victor Olofsson for Brock Besser, you're basically you're trading away the same type of player. One's a lefty and one shoots right.
Yeah, but you want to get rid of the money.
you don't want to get rid of the money right now. I don't like the good thing about Victor Olofsson is he's basically on a 2-year deal. I think he has one more year left.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Year. I know he's scoring goals, but have you not said, and I'm not trying to jam words into your mouth for the sake of my argument. I don't like when people do that to me.
Yep.
But I feel like since it's on the record, you have said in the past that you do not win with players like Victor Olofsson, even when they're scoring 22 goals in 46 games or whatever he has.
Well, I think right now,
a more complete type of player, because Brock Besser, you're bringing in here to help hope that he can rejuvenate his goal scoring ability, because he can score 25, 30 goals in this league, which is exactly what Olofsson.
He can score 40. He can score 40 if he plays the whole season.
Even better to my point.
So what I'm trying to say is, I said this, and I think you've heard me say this multiple times.
I like the way you're thinking. A young kid that has upside, that's from that area, that could be, and you could be gambling on it, but it is enticing, right? It is enticing.
Well, how enticing is it for the Vancouver Canucks?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
To acquire Matt Savoy. Matt Savoy was drafted 9th overall. Okay. Matt Savoy is in the Western Hockey League right now, playing very well. Okay. He's a 9th overall draft pick. He's a smaller right-handed shot center / right winger. Okay. He is a guy right now that I think the Vancouver Canucks with 100% certainty would want to get their hands on. Because he's that type of player in the system. He's 19 years old, a 9th overall pick. He is going to be a guy that can score goals this year. And moving forward, I think that would be a player that the Vancouver Canucks would be very interested in. He's playing for the Winnipeg Ice. Okay. He's a Western Hockey League kid.
Does that mean that you, listen, I do believe that you have to give up one of your roster spots, like Petey said, to get rid of a little cap. And maybe you take a Casey Mittelstadt, you take one of these young kids, you throw in a third round pick or something for Brock Besser, and you probably could pull in that deal and not hurt your roster and improve your goal scoring. You're taking a chance by getting rid of a young kid. You don't know how he's going to be, but that's what you have to do to get better right away. So I don't know. And it's a good thought to think, but what other teams could be up for Brock Besser? Because you talk about the trade deadline, like what teams are that team that is going to be looking for someone to acquire somebody like that for the stretch run? Like the teams that usually
thing, but now you got to make room for 2 more years. As Riv mentioned, he's on 3. So if you're making the move for him, it's not like a rental type thing.
Exactly.
What'd you think about the Bo Horvat deal and the trade and the contract?
I thought the trade was a decent trade. I mean, I thought the Islanders got the better of that. I mean, Bolivia is a good player, but he's not a Bo Horvat type player, I don't think.
Were you surprised to sign an eight-year extension?
I was just going to say, the contract again, these big, long contracts. And how old is Bo right now? 30?
Horvat's 27.
27. Okay. So, he's got at least 5 solid years in him, 5 that he could be very dominant. It just seems that every contract these days is 7 years, 8 years. And a lot of the times, those 7-8 year contracts, I'd say 90% of the time, 95% of the time, are too long for these players to keep up the level of play that that you need as making that type of money. I mean, good for Bo. If they want to pay it to him, that's awesome. But I just think that contract again is going to come back in 5 years. After 5 years, and it's going to be a nuisance.
Do you think Lou Lamoriello cares about year 6, 7, and 8? He's looking in this league is looking to win a Stanley Cup.
No, he doesn't think that now. But I'm telling you, at year 6, he's going to have to maneuver around his cap because of that contract.
He's not going to be doing it, JR, is what I'm trying to get at. He's already
okay. All right. I mean, that's another whole conversation in itself. Whether he's going to be around,
right?
Again, But
Horvat's 28 in April. So,
I mean, what was the longest contract you guys ever signed?
My 3-year entry level deal.
Okay. My longest contract was 5 years. It was a 5-year contract. Never signed a contract longer than 5 years. And, you know, I think that's a safe amount of years to get what you need out of what you're paying somebody.
Do you think contracts should be capped in terms of years? I know they are at 8 years, depending on the, your standing with the organization and stuff. UFAs with a new team can sign 7, but do you think they should be capped shorter?
I think a 5-year cap would save so much hassle, so much grief, so much ridicule. And also it'll allow players to be more, I think would be more, motivated to play better year after year and have that opportunity for a free agent opportunity. You know, you see these guys that have awesome years in contract years. And then afterwards they sign these contracts and they just disappear. Right. I.e. Jeff Skinner. Now he's having a great year this year. I'm not talking about this, but right after he had a great year before he signed, and then he disappeared the year after he signed. Remember that Alexander Semin?
Oh yeah,
that piece of shit that had like 40 goals, and he signed his contract, and I don't think he scored more than 5 the rest of his career. He just disappeared off the face of the earth because he got a long term, big money contract that was guaranteed. I just think, you know, 5 year saves a GM the hardship of a player not living up to the salary that he's making at the end of his career, and allows the player to see free agency more, gives them just a little bit more incentive to have better years and more consecutive years.
Well, it's William Karlsson too. You know, it's guys like that that get shot out of a cannon with a new team, sign a massive contract long term, and then
43 snipes.
Yeah, and then never lived
up to it after.
Listen,
that.
Yeah. Comfort leads to complacency. It always happens. When you're comfortable and everything's just fine and dandy, you don't have to worry about anything. All of a sudden, you just let your guard down and you don't prepare the same way. You're not as gritty. Now, there's some exceptions, right? There's some exceptions to that rule. But in general, you give these kids 8 years and $60 million. That, you know, even more, like, where's the motivation to, you know, to year after year to put those, you know, to put those numbers up? Like, where are they getting scared? Where are they, you know, that just I truly believe that there are guys that get hurt, right? And you see them gone for 3 weeks for an injury that they should be back in 3 days. Yeah. But what do they have to come back for? There's pressure to score. They can take
their time.
So you're saying like, what would be the ideal term on deal? Because, you know, if you remember back, you know, you had players like Alex Ovechkin who ended up signing,
look no further than
what was that? $123 million for 13 years.
Yeah. But listen, you have your exception to the rule. I mean, Alex Ovechkin is an exception to the rule. I think Patrick Kane is an exception to the rule. Sidney Crosby. These guys are they're generational players, and they make organizations relevant and big and prosperous, right? But how many of them are there in the league? 10? So what I'm saying is you have exceptions to that rule, but in general, the 5-year, 8 million, 5-year, 9 million, that's to me, 5 years is a good kind of breaking
point.
Well,
the league would be healthier. You wouldn't have these teams trading first round picks or giving first round picks and shitty contracts to get rid of players because their backs are against the wall. Granted, yes, I understand we were players and you need to you need to advocate for the players and more money for the players. And that's fine and dandy, but you're the ones paying escrow on these shitty contracts. You're the ones that are jacking up the prices and the dead money that these teams are carrying. So, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, like I know Gordon Gekko said greed is good, but I mean,
I think the NHL concussion protocol, you know, they put these spotters in the rink to watch guys that get hit in the head and they get pulled out of games for their own benefit, to protect them from themselves. Because a lot of NHL guys, especially back in the day, will play after getting knocked out. They don't want to come out of a game. But if they have to come out of the game to protect the players from themselves, it's going to be more healthy for them. It's the same thing with the GMs. The GMs have hurt their teams, have hurt their cap, have hurt their teams by signing huge contracts, long-term contracts, for players that can't live up to that level the whole time. And the next thing you know, their third and fourth lines are absolutely depleted. A perfect example, Chicago Blackhawks, but that's what happens when you win championships. You give Kane and Taves $10.5 million for 10 years. And granted, Kane's still playing at a high level, but you know, Jonathan Taves is not worth $10.5 million right now, and he hasn't been for the last 3 years.
Yeah. Is Sidney Crosby still worth 8.7?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I sit here and I look at Sidney Crosby's, he signed a 12-year deal for $104.4 million, $8.7 million a year. He signed it in 2013-14. So he's on year
$3 million this year.
Yeah, he's on year 10, okay? Year 10 of the deal. At 8.7. And I think to myself, if Sidney Crosby would have been just money hungry, how many Stanley Cups would he have won?
One?
Maybe one, you'd say?
Well, I think he won maybe the zero. Two after he signed this deal.
Sidney Crosby's taking a percentage of the cap, and he's maxing out all of this money every single year because he is the face of the entire league. Then he's got his buddy, Evgeny Malkin, who believed deep in his heart that he was not a backseat driver to Sidney Crosby, that he should be driving right beside him, right? And he would have demanded more money, and that would have threw their cap completely in disarray. So Sidney Crosby made a choice years ago that he was going to get paid well, but he was not going to be the highest paid player in the game. And three Stanley Cups later, I think he would look at his career, go back and look at his career and say, I did the right thing, because he's going to end his career making $150 million.
Yeah. Who sent the, I mean, it was in our group text about Brad Marchand and what he said. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. In that text, you said, this is all about Pastrnak, right? In terms of Boston is a very, very good team right now and odds on favorite to win the Stanley Cup right now. And they have been very, very good for a long time because these players all have contracts that keep the bottom end of their team very strong.
Yep.
Right. And it's a working combination, you know, it really is. But
like to think right now, the highest paid player on that team is David Pastrnak at $6.6 million. You look at all the top teams in the league, like, you know, like Connor McDavid is making 12.5. I mean, that is a significant amount of the cap. You look at Boston. Well,
Marchand's been in the top five in points for a lot of years. And what's he making?
He's making 6.125.
He's dramatically underpaid. Dramatically yes. underpaid.
Yes. And then it comes back to JR. It comes back to, you know, when you look at what Kevin Adams has done, he went out and Petey and I kind of disagreed with this situation, but he went out at the start of the season After 1 year of Tage Thompson blowing it out of the water, he decides to sign Tage Thompson for a $50 million deal. Okay. $7.14 million a year. It has now worked in Kevin Adams' favor because Tage Thompson has played himself into a top forward in this league. You look at the signing of Matias Samuelsson, who's going to be one of the top defending defensemen in the league, and I think he's going to be underpaid very, very soon. Okay. And then you look at him signing Dylan Cousins, $7 million. Could Dylan Cousins have made more money with his comparables that are out there? Yes, he could have made more, but it's a really good contract for Kevin Adams.
It's amazing.
No, I've had three phone calls that blacked out my
call can totally black out your head.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyway, where I was going with this is Kevin Adams needs to be in a situation where he can
you chew gum. Can you chew gum and walk at the same time?
No, I can't. But Kevin Adams is in a situation that he has to go and he has to find a way to get Rasmus Dahlin to buy into this venture moving forward. And you look at Charlie McAvoy, okay?
Turn your ringer off, for fuck's sake.
I can't. It's connected to my computer. It's an absolute joke. Anyway, I'm sorry. What I was trying to say is, you know, you look at the Boston Bruins. They have Charlie McAvoy signed for $9.5 million. Okay. And, you know, that's a good contract. And I think it's a big comparable for a player like Rasmus Dahlin. And if you want a chance to win, I think you need to be in a situation where you need to be under, you know, the $10 million mark.
Listen, I'm not against players making a lot of money because the league is healthy. If the teams want to pay them big money, so be it. Listen, if they're going to pay it for you, great. For me, it's the length of contracts more than it is the amount of contracts. That's for me. I don't know.
At the All-Star game, this will be my last question for you, Jeremy. Sidney Crosby was asked about the playoff format, and he said he would prefer 1 through 8. 1 play 8, 2, 7, and so on and so forth. What are your thoughts on that?
I love the traditional. I you know, when I got into the league back in 88, there was 21 teams. There was divisions. I played in the Norris division, and it was just a beast of a division. And you had the most unbelievable rivalries that were created. I mean, the games that I remember are playing Detroit, playing St. Louis, playing Minnesota. Those three teams, we hated each other so much because in order to get to the semifinals, you had to beat them in the first two rounds. So you know you were going to have seven games or whatever the case may be of knockdown, drag out. We hate your fucking guts hockey because you had to get out of your division to get to the conference final in order to get to the semifinal. There's such great storylines in competitive rivalry hockey. And I think the National Hockey League has totally gotten away from rival hockey. What they're doing now, they're trying to help it out a little bit. I think the wild card kind of throws a wrench into that. But I love divisional rivalries. I love divisional makeups. I would go back to the division, you know, 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3, battle it out.
Yes. Then you come out of your division, play the other division for the conference. And then the conference champions play each other in the finals. That's exactly. And I'm sorry if one division is stacked and a really good team gets eliminated. That makes for the most exciting division. I
don't agree with it at all.
Well, why are you playing? Why, if you go 1 through 8, are you going to go and play a team that you only play 4 times versus a team that you play 8? Like, it makes no sense to me. Doesn't the NFL do divisionals?
Does make sense because...
JR, I don't know the answer to this. Does the NFL do divisional matchups in the playoffs?
Yes.
Divisional. So like the AFC East will play each other and they come out of the East and then they play the AFC other division.
No, I think they have that wild card. They have the wild card also, which kind of puts a wrench into division. There's AFC and NFC, right? So I don't know. Whenever you throw wild card in there, I think you disrupt the classic division rivalry situation. Riv, you don't think that Montreal playing Boston?
I'll give you a better one: New Jersey and the Rangers.
I don't think
the Rangers fans or the New Jersey fans gives a flying rat's ass about playing each other in the first round. I think they care about winning the Stanley Cup. And I think if your team.
But that has nothing to do with it. Of course they want to win the Stanley Cup, but you don't think it'll be more energetic. You don't think the electricity, you don't think the viewership, you don't think the rivalry of New York yelling at Jersey fans, but the arena atmosphere will be so much greater because you are playing the team that you hate the most, right? There's just no question about it.
Does Tampa Bay have hatred towards Toronto? There's no rivalry there. There's none at all.
Well, that's the National Hockey League's fault for putting them in the same division.
We're looking at Winnipeg Jets, okay, who's number two in the Western Conference, going to play Minnesota. Is that a real rival?
Hey, listen, when I was in Philly,
Seattle playing LA, is that a rival? These are all the teams that would play each other. Those are not rival games.
But if I was in Philly, that's the way they set up the divisions. You know, you can realign the divisions and do by area rather than, you know, Chicago.
You remember your body, okay? You, above all people, played this game. You were super insanely skilled. You were one of the most recognizable faces in the NHL. You were a superstar. You were a guy that scored 50 goals in this league multiple times, 40, 30. You were an ultimate player. You played the game different than other elite superstars, and how you did that is you were throwing your body around, your little body. Like, you weren't a big guy, you weren't a small guy by any stretch, but you weren't a big guy. You're throwing around your body, reckless abandon. You're a little bit nuts, but you're producing goals and points. And after an 82 game schedule, you, back in the day, if your team was one of the top teams in the league, you played the lesser team. If you were number one, okay, in your conference, you played the number 18 because that's what you worked and threw your body around for 82 games. Now you're going to tell me Toronto Maple Leafs that are the number four team in the league that have battled all year long, gone through injuries, had to do what they've had to do. They've got to play the number fucking six team in the league in the first round. Does that make any sense to you whatsoever?
No, it's a good point.
Okay, it doesn't make any fucking sense at all. Fuck the rivalries. I don't give a shit about the rivalries. I care about what the players put in the 82 game schedule to get to be a number one or a number two or a number three in your conference that gives you the opportunity to play a much lesser team in your conference. That's the way it should be played.
Yeah, but if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, do you want to play the lesser teams or do you want to play the best teams in the league to become the best team in the league?
I think you want to play the lesser team. That's what I want. I want to play the least stacked team because I.
Well,
I
have to get back.
How many times have you heard somebody say, "Well, they won a championship, but look at the fucking teams they had to play, and look at the teams that this team had to play." That's what they say
for 2 months, and then all of a sudden, for the rest of the time, you got guys walking around with Stanley Cup rings and their name on a cup. That's it, because they deserve to be there.
But in this day and age, with the parity is so good, I mean, we saw the LA Kings get into the playoffs in the last game of the season. They're the 16th seed team in the playoffs, and they just ripped right through and won a fucking Stanley Cup.
What's even more ironic about this, JR? If we're doing what I would want the league to do, guess who Toronto Maple Leafs are playing in the first round? Because they're the number four seed. They're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. And guess who the New Jersey Devils are playing? Because they're the number three seed right now in the Eastern Conference. Guess who they play in the first round? The number six rank, New York Rangers. So they're going to play, as of right now, they're going to play the same teams as what they would play in a divisional rival.
Should just go conference 1 through 8 and not have these wild card teams?
100,000%.
I would like that better than the wild card game.
I don't need wild card. You're going to have your top 8 teams. Boston's going to play the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. Carolina's going to play Washington. You're going to have New Jersey play the Rangers, and you're going to have Tampa Bay play Toronto Maple Leafs, because it's 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5. And that's the way it should be done.
I don't disagree with you, because I think that keeps the rivalry and I think that keeps the conference aspect together. You lose the divisional aspect, but it does make a team work harder to be in that top 8
4.
Of your conference.
Top 8, but you want to be in the top 4, because what does that give you? Home ice advantage.
Oh. Home ice advantage for sure
for the first round, right? Yeah. So that's just the way I see it. I would love
I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. I think that's better than what they have right now. I truly believe that is better. And you know, this reseeding bullshit, it's just, you just know who you're playing. I was going to say, I won the President's Cup trophy twice and got knocked out in the first round twice. And it's fucking parity in the league is unbelievable. And I hate the fucking President's Cup trophy. It means fucking nothing. But.
Well, it means 50 grand each is what it means.
No, I think
I didn't get a bonus. I didn't get a bonus for winning the President's Cup trophy.
They didn't add a bonus to the President's Trophy until after the CBA, because I was our player rep, and I remember our playoff bonuses were significantly changed. Well, I shouldn't say ours, because I never was in the league when the playoff bonuses were what they were before the CBA, but it was significantly different. I mean, JR, like, what would you guys get for playoff bonuses for the first round back in the last year you were in the playoffs before the CBA, because it was $5,000 for the first round, $10,000 for the second, and then it was another, you got $25,000 if you went to the conference finals, $10,000 for the President's Trophy.
I think it was $60,000 if you won the cup or something like that. It was like 10, 20, 40, 60. It wasn't significant, but in terms of what we were making at the time.
Yeah, so we got $10,000 for the President's Trophy the year we won it.
Yeah, no,
what it is now?
I think it's probably hasn't changed much. I mean, I think they say we compensate you guys so much in the regular season that, you know, it shouldn't be about playing for bonus money. It's about playing for the cup. I feel like that was kind of like the...
Hey, bonus money was great. When I first got in, we had, I don't know if you guys had this. Riv, you might have had this. You had your segment bonuses, five game segment bonuses that the teams would give out, literally would hand out envelopes.
Every team was different.
Cash. Out envelopes of cash, you know, for having a certain amount of goals against, certain amount of goals for, power play, wins. It was unbelievable. We played to get those on.
Listen, this is how messed up this league is and the players that are in it. Players get paid every 2 weeks and they get that check, which is kind of like, for most people, would be like heart attack to see the checks. Yeah. The players cared more about the goddamn bonus money that they got, because it was just kind of like, it was about competition. It was about...
boys, we got to do this together. We've got to get a shutout here because we'll get $250 into the kitty. Like, really?
Here's the worried about that?
What's really cool? You know, what was really cool is coming onto the bus. All right. On your first trip after the 5-game segment and your team player, your team player,
rep.
You know, the guy, the rep guy, he was standing there with a handful of envelopes and he took, oh, here's yours. And everybody's waiting, right? Thank you. And it, sometimes it was this thin, sometimes it was this thick. And it was all hundreds. And it was like, that's awesome. We got poker money. We got poker money for the trip.
Yeah. Hey, the thicker, the better. Hey, boys, the thicker, the better.
Oh yeah. I love that old time. Yeah,
so here's a breakdown of the playoff bonuses to teams. And then we'll go from there. So I think 25 players or 26 players get a share, right? That's how it was when we played. There were 26 shares on the playoff because the playoff roster was 26. Mm-hmm. President's Trophy winners get $500,000. Okay, so let's just say you split it up amongst 25 guys for simple numbers. That's about $20,000 a guy. First round losers, $250,000 to each team. So that's about $10,000 per guy. Okay. Second round losers, $500,000. So they get $20,000 per guy. So if you go to the second round, you're getting about $30,000. Third round losers get to split 1.25 each. Between the two teams. So that's another
That's 45, 50.
Okay. And to win Stanley Cup finalists, split $2.25 million. Or actually, maybe this is, they don't, maybe it doesn't roll over. So they split $2.25 million amongst two teams. And then the Stanley Cup champions get $3.75 million to divvy up.
So I just text, McKenzie, and he obviously won the President's Trophy with the Florida Panthers last year, and he said that they received around 15,000
after tax, right?
No idea.
Oh, so okay, so maybe 15,000 because they probably split that up amongst guys that were called up, and
well, they could have split it. I would imagine the players too. Maybe they would have got around $20,000. Okay.
Hey, listen, but, I'll tell you this,
or even more.
Let's finish this conversation with saying something really cool. Regardless of the bonuses that they were getting, and they were a lot less than the salaries that they made during the regular season, the fact that they play their best hockey and the best fucking sport in playoff history is hockey when they get paid the least. And that's what I love about fucking hockey players. They play their best hockey when they're getting the least amount of money paid to them. To me, end of sentence, end of story. I love that.
Great stuff today, JR.
Good show, boys. Good show, boys. I love you.
That's a wrap on another episode of After the Whistle. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, After the Whistle, and at Craig Revay 52, at The Instigator 76. And you can find us, as you already know, on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, and anywhere else where you can get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to spread the word.